Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In addition to becoming fusion manufacturers, we are also becoming manufacturers of these high temperature superconducting material. And that certainly gives us an edge by far, not only a technical one, but also commercial, because these materials can be also commercialized on the way to fusion, can be commercialized in other non-fusion markets. It's the only material that will revolutionize not only energy generation via fusion and via indirect applications to geothermal, but also energy transmission via the superconducting grid and energy storage via a technique called SMES.
That was a brief from this week's episode. Stay tuned for yet another interesting conversation. Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Mission Shunya podcast, the podcast where we explore the stories at the intersection of sustainability, innovation, and the global energy transition. If you have been following the nuclear energy series so far, we have explored quite a bit. From understanding the basic science and the safety principles in Nuclear 101, to unpacking the myths with experts from Radiant Energy Group, and even stepping into the institutional side of the sector with World Nuclear Association. And while most of our conversation have centered around nuclear fission, the technology powering plants today, it's time to look ahead. In today's conversation, we cover the story of an European startup working on compact fusion reactors based on a novel design. So, to discuss that and more, we welcome our guest, who is...
Hi, I'm Francesco Volpe. I'm a physicist and the founder of Renaissance Fusion, a fusion startup in France.
So, Francesco, let's start with the origins of Renaissance Fusion. So, I understand you were probably more into academia before you wanted to actually get started with this. So, what was the moment that you decided that you should make the leap and get into the world of startups?
I made this decision when I noticed that atomic fusion was going a little bit too slow and a new phenomenon of fusion startup was emerging that was taking bigger risks and therefore had the potential for bigger rewards. There were startups in the United States on technologies like the tokamaks or laser fusion, but there were no startups in Europe, or at least in continental Europe, and no startups anywhere in the world on stellarators, which is a specific, very promising fusion concept. So that inspired me to make this leap.
Has this leap been really rewarding so far? Like, how many years have you been into this, and how has it evolved over the years?
Yeah, so the leap has been very rewarding. Yes, that's the short answer. A longer answer is that, as I like to comment with my co-founder, it's a roller coaster, ups and downs, but the ups always exceed the downs. The journey started in 2019. With this idea of making this fusion startup based on stellarators, high-temperature superconductors, which are special materials generating strong magnetic field, very useful to make more compact fusion reactors, and liquid metal walls to make the reactor less radioactive, more publicly acceptable, and lower in maintenance. So back in 2019, the story originated from the technical point of view, the three technical ideas were laid out synergistically to each other. And I also did an MBA because, as you said, I come from the academia. I'm a physicist. I didn't know much on business, and maybe I still don't. But I wanted to learn the basics of business administration. I did an MBA, And then in 2020, in the middle of COVID, which was an interesting experience, I officially founded Renaissance Fusion in France. The beginnings were a bit slow, partly due to COVID, but that's okay because, you know, it gave me plenty of time for reflection at the beginning. There's a lot of grant writing, applications for funding and thinking on the technology itself. So we really started taking off in March 2021 with the first investments, the first team members. And ever since, we have been growing steadily. So also thanks to various investments, in particular one in 2022 of 15 million. This was venture capital, then a public grant from the French government in late 23, and another venture capital investment in late 24. So thanks to these three investments, we kept growing. We are now 70 people and counting. So we aim at growing to more than 100 by the end of the year. It has been a very rewarding journey because it's a combination of human passion and new technologies developed in frequent iterations. So it's a iterate rapidly, fail fast mentality typical of a startup. And we made great strides, especially in the area of liquid metals that I was mentioning before. But we have two important milestones coming up. Also on the stellarators and the high-temperature superconductors.
Wonderful. Well said indeed. You brought out all the points that you would typically expect startup coming out of probably, say, Silicon Valley to kind of, say, going through the ups and downs, getting the team members right, getting some good funding and everything. But the entire thing is on a different scale. You're building hardware products and really tough, challenging hardware products. And I have to mention this because fission is something that's commercially available, doable, but fusion is a futuristic technology. Can you kind of help us break the technology for fusion into smaller parts and kind of give us some overview on what is really happening? What are the enablers in each bit of the fusion puzzle?
Yes, yeah, with pleasure. So, fusion, let's start maybe with fission, which is more common in fission. Big nuclei like uranium are split into smaller ones and heat is released. And this heat is released, is utilized to convert water in steam and move turbines. In fusion, on the contrary, we make reactions between small nuclei. We merge them and form larger nuclei. So, for instance, we take two types of hydrogen, deuterium and tritium, but it's basically hydrogen, and we fuse them and we create new nuclei, helium specifically, helium and a neutron. It sounds complicated, but if you think about it, it's very similar to chemical reactions, but with a lot of advantages. So, fossil fuel power plant, we burn fossil fuels. So that's a chemical reaction between some molecule of hydrocarbon and oxygen. So it's a reaction between molecules. Molecules are made of atoms. A chemical reaction is when the atoms of these molecules get reorganized into different molecules. And of course, you want these reactions to release heat, so exothermic, as they say. And just like when you burn fossil fuels, you need special conditions. So these reactions don't just happen at room temperature. You need to heat up your fossil fuel. The nuclear reaction, which is fusion, also needs special conditions. So fusion is a nuclear reaction, is a reaction between nuclei, not between molecules, and similar to the rearrangement of atoms in a chemical reaction. In the fusion reaction, so these nuclei, which are made of neutrons and protons, what happens is that the neutrons and protons get organized in different nuclei, and heat is released, but a lot of it, a lot of energy. And, you know, to continue with the analogy, similar to the chemical reaction, you need to create proper conditions. So you need to create conditions of high temperature, actually very high, similar to a star, in fact even hotter than a star, hundreds of millions of degrees, and sufficient density. And there is a third requirement, which is you need good thermal insulation, because these fusion reactions produce heat, but you want to use some of this heat to promote more fusion reactions. So in a nutshell, fusion is the energy of the stars. It's a reaction between nuclei, sharing some analogies with chemical reactions. And on Earth, we can realize it if we reproduce those conditions. So we need a special device in which we heat matter to very high temperatures, similar to a star, and we achieve sufficiently high density and sufficiently good thermal insulation, or confinement, as we say in jargon. And so there are two main approaches to fusion on Earth. One is compressing a capsule by very powerful lasers, but this has also some military applications, and we prefer to stay away from that. And then there is magnetic confinement, which is the one we are working on. So you take a gas, you ionize it, you inject energy, and so the atoms are split into ions and electrons. So you have a big soup of ions and electrons, so to say. You levitate it by means of powerful magnets, so they stay away from the walls. This is very important, because now that they don't touch the wall, you can heat them to very high temperature. And when you achieve sufficient conditions, fusion reactions start taking place. And so massive quantities of heat are produced, and the rest is similar to any power plant. This heat is used to convert water in steam and move the turbines. And maybe if I may add one more thing, if you don't mind, very quickly, sorry for the long answer to a short question, but you asked also on what technologies enable fusion, and I kind of said it in passing, but these magnets needed to levitate this ionized gas are really a crucial component. So the more powerful these magnets, in the sense of the stronger the magnetic field, the more compact the fusion reactor. So this is really a fusion enabling technology, at least in our approach. In the other approach, of course, you want very powerful lasers with a high repetition rate. And another enabling technology, which is common to both families, laser-based and magnetic, is the conditions of fusion are really extreme. So very hot, as I said. And so besides, neutrons are also produced. So to cope with this extreme heat and extreme neutrons, quantities of neutrons, you need special materials, which in our case are liquid metals. So molten metals facing the plasma and stopping the neutrons.
Wonderful. I think you put it very neatly. You segregated the individual components, and even probably a person who's not very science-oriented kind of will understand what you're kind of doing. Now, you did mention, I've heard your other interviews, and you did mention that you probably started a little late in the startup space for fusion. So where did you think that you had an edge? Was it, again, as you said, you're not doing the laser-based fusion tech, but you're doing more on the magnets. So did you think that you had an edge over the other technology in terms of when you can actually reach commercialization?
Yeah, we have an edge because while on the one hand, it's true that we joined the ecosystem of fusion startups relatively late, it's also true that we were a pioneer in the special technology called Stellarator. So among Stellarators, we were actually one of the first, together with a company in the US called Type 1 Energy. And now this concept, this approach is very widespread, and in fact, it's becoming the leading approach. So in the two big families of laser and magnetic, there are some subfamilies. And within magnetic, so we were the first, together with Type 1 Energy, debuting on the Stellarator, which is now becoming the leading concept. But in addition to be to being one of the first accelerators, what really gives us an edge is three things. So one, we are simplifying the accelerator. So these fusion devices tend to be very complicated, and the accelerator is especially complicated, including in its shape. The shape is like a distorted donut, and we invented a new way of building the reactor, which is much simpler and consists just in several cylinders connected together to form a donut. So I like to compare our innovation to becoming the IKEA of fusion, so building a kit that can be shipped to the power plant assembly site. And so you literally have to put together the various cylinders similar to putting together pieces of wood for a cabinet. So this is a big simplification, a big innovation. The other two, I mentioned already the liquid metal, which is actually transversal and, is beneficial for fusion in general, at least when using deuterium-tritium, the two hydrogen isotopes that I mentioned before. And finally, but not the least, these high-temperature superconductors. So we have an edge compared to other fusion companies, because the other fusion companies are buying this material, and there is a shortage worldwide. This is an artificial material that is synthesized in the lab, and you need to create a particular type of crystal very precisely. You literally build it atom by atom. It's fascinating. And because it is so complicated to build this material, which is so crucial to fusion, some of our competitors are suffering from an imbalance between supply and demand by more than a factor of two, whereas we decided to build our own. So in addition to becoming fusion manufacturers, we are also becoming manufacturers of this high-temperature superconducting material. And that certainly gives us an edge by far, not only a technical one, but also commercial, because these materials can be also commercialized on the way to fusion, can be commercialized in other non-fusion markets. It's the only material that will revolutionize not only energy generation via fusion and via indirect applications to geothermal, but also energy transmission via the superconducting grid and energy storage via a technique called SMES. So it's really a versatile, highly impactful material for the energy transition.
I was in fact going to ask about what are the technology edge that you have, and you right as you mentioned that developing and building individual components in-house is probably something that you kind of value. And I think that is quite similar to what most of the startups in other sectors are actually also doing, example from automotive and electric mobility in particular. But in addition to the magnet stellarators, do you have anything else that you think are very proprietary that is kind of giving you an edge? You did mention about the modularity of the design. What else is modular apart from the stellarator in this?
The heating system, for instance, is modular. It's based on several microwave sources, so similar to the microwave in our kitchen, but much more powerful. On that one, I cannot claim that we are unique. This modularity in the heating system is not unique to us, but certainly it helps the realization of the power plant. And in terms of proprietary technologies, not necessarily modular. One more that I would like to list is lithium enrichment and tritium extraction. So fusion, as I said, is based on fusing this nuclei of hydrogen, more specifically two special types of hydrogen called deuterium and tritium, one of which is abundant, is found in marine water, and there are supplies lasting for billions of years, so it's really extremely abundant. The other one, called tritium, is not abundant. In fact, it's scarce. There are only 30 kilos in the world as of today, and a single fusion reactor will need 150 kilos per year. So the idea here is that fusion reactors will breed their own fuel, the scarce one, the Tritium. And we have some very innovative proprietary ideas on how to do the breeding and more specifically how to extract the tritium. So it's in a nutshell, is a technique similar to distillation. Well, let's say when you make whiskies, forgive me for this analogy, but it's similar to separating liquids and gas. In this case, it's separating liquids and solid. So it's by precipitation. So you can separate the tritium simply by precipitation, very elegantly. And related to that, another big innovation, proprietary innovation, is lithium enrichment. So lithium comes in, there are different varieties of lithium called lithium 6 and lithium 7. And to make the reactor as efficient as possible, some fusion companies want to use lithium 6. We can work with natural lithium. We don't need to enrich it. So the same lithium as in the car batteries without any special treatment. But other fusion companies need this specific type of lithium. And we have an innovation in how to produce that, how to extract, how to separate that special type of lithium. In the fusion community, we tend to call each other competitors, so cooperative competitors. So we, at the end of the day, we all want fusion to succeed. So it might sound counterintuitive that although we don't need lithium 6, we developed a technique to produce it, but it's actually very consistent with the overall strategy and mentality of this community, this fusion community. We want fusion to succeed. So if other companies need lithium 6 and we have an idea to produce lithium 6, we make it available. So we made the product available to our fellow fusion startups.
That's wonderful. It's good to hear that you have a cooperative community, especially with the intent to have fusion succeed. Is this all playing into kind of reducing the cost and closing the gap and getting to commercialization faster?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you touched on a very important point and very dear to me, commercialization and making fusion economically attractive. We started this conversation by saying that I come from the academia and, you know, in the academia, in national labs, we tend to concentrate on the science and technology, but there is a third aspect, of course, which is economics. We don't want to build just a device for making physics experiments. We are really building a reactor here. And of course, it needs to be competitive. It needs to be economically attractive. Otherwise, nobody will buy it. Nobody will use it. So indeed, we care a lot about economical attractiveness, cost reduction, and these technologies just listed are a way to achieve that goal. We like to say that we are rooted in science and we do economically constrained engineering. So all the, you know, the stellarator simplification, the in-house manufactured HTS, the special walls of liquid metals, all of this is guided by the idea of making the reactor smaller, simpler, faster, and cheaper so that everybody can adopt it and rapidly worldwide. In a way, we would like to reproduce the success story of solar that ramped very rapidly, beating any expectation. So if you want to do something similar, you need something extremely attractive commercially and, you know, extremely simple, modular, easy to ship and assemble quickly anywhere in the world. So, yeah, all the technologies we are working on are exactly aimed at that.
Super. Now, continuing on the conversation around commercialization, you are based in France, and France has a pretty big installation base for nuclear fission reactors. So what kind of support are you seeing from the government? And of course, you did mention that you had a good round of investments coming along, grants also. But apart from this, how else do you think is the community in France and probably around adjacency in Europe helping you kind of enabling fusion reach the market faster?
The community, well, in grants is certainly, so financial support is certainly one way to help, because unfortunately, fusion is very capital intensive. In absolute sense, in an absolute sense, not in a relative sense. So, building a reactor, fusion reactor, or developing a fusion reactor can be expensive. But I would like to clarify for the audience that the unit cost, the cost per watt, is actually very competitive, especially with our technology. But yeah, the entry point is high. The investment barrier at the beginning is high, so the total capital cost of the reactor is significant, and it needs some help from both private and public sources in terms of financing. So any grant is certainly a way by which governments, or in general, you know, countries, systems, ecosystems can help Renaissance Fusion and other fusion startups. One tool to support fusion startups, which is becoming more and more popular, is public-private partnerships, so agreements between small or not so small private startups and academia and large national labs or international labs, on the other hand, to work together on topics of common interest that are at the same time scientifically appealing and also have an industrial return. And so these public-private partnerships, or PPPs, are another tool both in France, in Europe, and all around the world that can facilitate fusion and make it happen. And then the third element that I would like to add is training of young scientists, young engineers. In that, it's really a communal effort that we need. We need to work together as a society, as an ecosystem, to train the next generation, because the field is growing very quickly. The fusion industry is growing very quickly, but there is not enough talents to meet the demands of this growing industry. And there are not enough university programs, training in fusion or related technologies, and those programs do not put on the job market a sufficient number of candidates. So that aspect, I believe, needs to be addressed. It is partly being addressed already, but more needs to be done. And I look forward to, indeed, more being done in that compartment.
True. I think it is kind of a chicken and egg scenario. One, you need to have the industry to kind of support academic graduates to have some experience. But on the other hand, you need to have some basic understanding to kind of get to the industry. Francisco, now we know that there is still some time for commercialization. But have you done, of course, I'm sure you would have done some numbers and other things. But in terms of technical timeline and the commercial timeline, what are your next targets and what is the cost or other targets that you intend to achieve in the next few years?
Yes. So, I will answer on both technical and non-technical. Maybe let me start with technical. We have some very exciting things coming up from this very year. In fact, this summer, June, July, so the Stellarator eventually will be a donut of 4 meters in radius. The reactor donut will be 4 meters in radius. But we are building a smaller donut, not quite a reactor yet. It's more like a testing device to test our idea. I mentioned that, you know, the Stellarator is, traditional Stellarators are very complicated. Ours is much simpler. It consists of cylinders. I didn't mention that these cylinders are engraved, so they are patterned by means of a laser. This is a little bit like making cylindrical printed circuits, the same printed circuits that we have, let's say, in our computers or cell phones. Imagine large printed circuits, but cylindrical and superconducting, so conducting electricity with zero resistance to conduct very high currents and generate very strong fields. So that's, it sounds a bit futuristic, but this is crucial for what we are doing, because we need to make this work to for our simplification to be proven and our simplified reactor to be built. So one important milestone coming up, it's a tabletop stellarator made in copper, not 4 meters in radius, but only one, and it's small, it's in copper. But we want to show that we can generate the magnetic field necessary. Also in June, July, we have another important milestone coming up. So we already demonstrated the wall of liquid metal to stop the neutrons, to, you know, extract the heat, to break the tritium. And that liquid wall, however, was demonstrated at room temperature for now. So we are getting closer and closer to a reactor scenario. So for June, July, we will demonstrate operation at high temperature. High temperature means 900 degrees Celsius. This is the temperature, by the way, of the device. It's not the temperature of the gas or plasma, to be precise, inside the device, which, as I said, is hundreds of millions of degrees. And then, you know, we will demonstrate materials more and more reactor compatible. So this milestone of the high temperature liquid metal is coming up. We are very excited about it. And the third one I would like to mention, also very imminent, is expected by the end of the year, the prototyping of these materials, these crystals that, as I said, need to be very precise. We are going to make these materials on large surfaces of 1 meter by 1 kilometer. And this is unique in the world. The standard is 1 centimeter by 300 meters. We are doing 1 meter, so 100 times wider, and 1 kilometer, 3 times longer. You might wonder, why do we need to do that? One more time is related to the simplification of the stellarator. So if you make the superconductor in these large surfaces, there are some advantages when it comes to the engraving, and your stellarator ends up being simpler. So these large surfaces HTS are expected by the end of the year. So this is another big milestone. And maybe to clarify, the reason why it is so long is, so it's true that the donut is made of several cylinders of few meters each. But on these cylinders, we need to wrap a foil, and we need to wrap it multiple times, hence the 1 kilometer length.
Okay, it is a total length, but yeah, it'll be in a shape of the donut.
Yeah, no, the shape of the donut is really much, much smaller, much more compact. So the reactor is 4 meters. It's a donut of 4 meters in radius. Yeah, it can fit on a ship, to make an example. And actually, that's one of the applications that we have in mind. We really designed it to be as compact as possible, as cheap as possible. So 4 meters is a very reasonable, very compact size. But yeah, just like, you know, when you make a tokamak or a stellarator, the tokamak is another fusion device. So all these magnetic fusion devices, they need some form of cable or tape, or in our case, foil. So they are all based, so these big electromagnets, they are all based on some cable or tape or foil being wrapped multiple times. In our case, it is a foil as opposed to a cable or a tape. And maybe if I may add one more, I'm sorry, so when I speak about technical milestones, I get excited. This one, I really need to say it. There is a very important one, but that will take a little bit longer. That's expected for the end of 2026, which is the integration of all the three technologies, superconductor, liquid metal, and stellarator all together. So I mentioned this donut, and I mentioned that we want to build it in modules, cylindrical modules, connected together to indeed form a donut. So by the end of 2026, we expect to prove a single module of the donut, a single cylinder. The idea being, if you can build one, you can build many. So in this cylinder, you will have the liquid metal on the inside, you will have the superconductor on the outside, which will generate the stellarator field. So the field for the fusion device with the correct intensity and with the correct geometry and precision needed for fusion. that will be really a major, major milestone. And we will propel us into building more of these cylinders and building a full reactor.
Wonderful. On the commercial side?
On the commercial side, as early as late 25, early 26, we are going to sell some superconductor to non-fusion magnets. The road to fusion is still a bit long, so fusion reactors are expected for the early 2030s. However, all these technologies like the HTS or the liquid metal that we are developing for fusion also have applications in other fields, in other markets. So on the commercialization side, we will start selling in less than 1 year, we will start selling HTS to non-fusion magnets, such as cables or such as the wind industry. So in the wind industry, wind energy industry, the generators on top of the pillars are very heavy, and there are plans to install many offshore wind farms. So this be floating wind farms. So these pillars will be in the open sea waters. They will be like 100 meters tall on some floating stations. So installing these generators on top of these pillars, which are oscillating because again they are floating, that's really an engineering feat. So the industry, the wind energy industry, is interested in lighter generators, and thanks to HTS we can offer that. So that's really an area in which we expect to commercialize a lot our material, our HTS material. I would like to touch upon the concept of cooperative competitors for a second. In fusion, as I said, we are the only fusion company that is also becoming an HTS manufacturer. So in addition to the cable industry, in addition to the wind energy industry, another big market for this material is fusion itself. And so we will sell also to other fusion companies with this material that, as I said, is scarce, but thanks to our technique, we expect large volumes of production. And in the spirit of cooperation, we see nothing wrong, on the opposite, in selling HTS to other fusion companies. So we really hope to foster the fusion revolution, both directly via our own Stellarator and indirectly by selling HTS to other tokamaks and stellarators, or spherical tokamaks, etc., all the magnetic family of fusion reactors.
That's very good. Now, Francesco, on a final note, if we were to sit again, say, a decade later, 2035, how would the conversation look like? What do you think would have changed in the world of fusion?
That's a great question. So I think, I'm sure that within 10 years, so 2035, at least two or three fusion companies will have achieved not only net heat, but also net electricity. And the first reactors will be commercialized within 10 years from now. We like to say in the industry that we have an approach of multiple shots at targets, target. So out of 50 or so fusion companies around the world, at least two or three within 10 years from now will succeed. Of course, we want Renaissance Fusion to be one of those two or three that will succeed. What I can say with absolute certainty is that there will be commercial fusion reactors when we will have this conversation 10 years from now. And I can also suggest what technologies not necessarily what companies, but at least what technologies will these commercial reactors be based on. They will probably be stellarators, tokamaks, and laser fusion. So these are the three leading technologies. And a possible scenario is one in which one champion of each technology, one stellarator company, one tokamak company, one laser fusion company, will be commercializing fusion reactors. One important, so this is the part, this is the the part of the answer on which I'm sure, and this is inevitable, it's happening, it's it has already gained momentum. So on this, I'm 100% certain. The important part when we wonder about the future, I believe, is that there is always a gray zone and an area of uncertainty. And our mission as entrepreneurs, as scientists, as people who care about the environment, is reducing that uncertainty and make things happen. Not the obvious one, fusion is happening, we know that already, so not the obvious one, but the uncertain ones. So one area which is still a bit uncertain in this wonderful movement of fusion startups is cost reduction. So it is our duty as specialists of the field to really work hard on making fusion economically attractive. Because, as I said, if we don't do that, we will have this beautiful technology producing clean energy, but it will be pointless if nobody wants to buy it. So that's really an area in which we need to work hard. And if, as I hope, and as we are working very hard to realize, fusion will be Renaissance Fusion will be one of those top two or three leading fusion companies, I can tell you that that aspect will also be addressed. So fusion will be cost competitive with solar, with hydro, with wind, and with fission.
Wonderful. Your answer was very comprehensive. You mentioned about the high points, which is very certain, which you are very optimistic about, and which as part of the conversation, even I felt comfortable that you have some technologies which are close to commercialization, so that will definitely add to more funds for you to develop and work on the other part and to commercialize the other part. So I see a clear roadmap. And I'm sure, as you said, a lot of fusion companies coming together will also probably find out ways to make this commercially viable. So that was a very good and an optimistic note to kind of end the conversation on. Francesco, it has been an absolute pleasure to have this conversation with you. Personally, I learned a lot. So thank you for taking time to join me on the conversation today.
Thank you, Girish, for having me. Thank you for the audience. And thank you for the patience while listening to my sometimes long answers. But it is a complex technology. I did my best to explain it. And again, it was a real pleasure.
That was Francesco giving us a deep look into what it takes to build a fusion startup from the ground up. We spoke about what sets Renaissance Fusion's approach apart, why Europe is pursuing a different path from the US in the fusion race, and what it really takes to turn a physics concept into a grid-scale energy solution. It's a conversation that blends science, strategy, and the startup grit. And I hope you found it very interesting and insightful as always. In the next episode, we shift gears again to look at how nuclear risk is assessed, managed, and communicated. I'm sure you don't want to miss that. With that, this is Girish Shivakumar signing off, and as always, thank you for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.